GOP Senate candidates go on the attack. Buttigieg 2020 looking more like reality. That, plus Jennifer Messer's new contract, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 30th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, two of Indiana's Republican candidates for U.S. Senate went on the offensive against their primary opponents in new TV ads.
Businessman and former state representative Mike Braun's ad seeks to poke fun at opponents Todd Rokita and Luke Messer, both congressmen.
I'm Mike Braun. Today we're going to see if we can tell the difference between Congressman Rokita and Congressman Messer. You know these guys?
No, it's hard to tell them apart.
Todd Rokita's takes aim at Braun and Messer with attacks he's used throughout the campaign.
Mike Braun and Luke Messer, not conservatives.
The ad notes Braun voted in Democratic primaries for at least two decades, and it seeks to portray Messer as a so-called never-Trump lobbyist. Messer's ads have stayed away from negative attacks.
Do these ads tell us anything about where these candidates feel they are in the race? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, are Braun and Rokita trying to make up ground here, or is this just where this race is?
This race is the ugliest race I've seen in a long time. I mean, the quality of the debate is absurd. You know, they're all Trumpers. They're all Trumpers. And the idea that one is more Trump-like than another, and some of the, I mean, you've got Rokita talking about making English as the national language. Where is fluoride? I want to get that debate back on fluoride. It's a communist conspiracy. It's a joke. It is really a joke. Therefore, what's the other one? Messer is going to go save our country before it's too late. From Donald Trump, do you think? Or what is he saving us from, the Republican majority? I mean, the quality of the debate is infantile, and the quality of the candidates is even worse. And they're going as far to the right as they possibly can go, and they think that's a winning strategy for winning the primary, which it may be, given the state of the Republican Party, but it is a losing strategy for November.
If you're Luke Messer, his campaign so far has focused on the positive. The campaign says his ads will continue to focus on the positive. Can he get away with that for much longer?
Well, I mean, I think you're onto something with your initial question of, is this telling us something? And I think that it is telling us something, watching Braun and Rokita both come out with negative ads this week. What I think we have to be careful about is straying too far from the truth. And I think that there are components of both of these ads that really don't pass the smell test. And, like, let's make no mistake, there is no outsider in this race. You know, Todd Rokita has been on the government payroll for more than 20 years, and Mike Braun has been running for office for 14 years. And so, you know, the differences come down to something else. And I think that, I mean, and so everyone knows, I am firmly a supporter of Luke Messer, and the reason is because I think that he is our best candidate to win in November. And he does have the strongest record standing up for the Trump-Pence agenda in Congress. And so, you know, it's going to be a race. There's a lot of campaign left to play out over the next several weeks. But, you know, there are some differences that we're going to get into more.
The Messer campaign has really taken aim at this particular Rokita ad for what it says are some falsehoods, saying he's never supported a tax hike. He did vote for a budget bill that ultimately ended up raising property taxes, but not by $1 billion, and that he was he supported amnesty. He did an interview in which he appears to support a path to citizenship. Quite frankly, does that matter?
I don't think people are hanging on, you know, the nuances in that vein. When you're throwing the amount of mud that's being thrown around, I think little speckles aren't really going to make much difference. My interpretation on all this, and if we fall back to conventional wisdom, and I think maybe that's folly in this political climate, but it would suggest that if you feel that you're ahead, if your internal numbers suggest that you're in a good position, then you don't need to necessarily go negative. You don't need to attack as much. You can build up your reputation and your standing with your constituency. And the conventional wisdom similarly would hold: if you're behind, you start throwing whatever you can, and so it's the nastier. Again, who's to say that this is an era of normal politics? I would just point out, and you know who put fluoride in toothpaste?
It was
Indiana University.
It was the
communists.
That's one and the same in my book.
John,
I want to... Is there a differentiation? They're both technically negative ads or attack ads, but the tone of Mike Braun's is very different from the tone of Todd Rokita's. Does that make a difference to the voter who's out there watching it?
You know, I think when we're talking about what John was just describing, and that is basically a big trough of mud and everybody's wallowing around in it, the person who can make you smile, maybe make you laugh, maybe take a slightly lighthearted tone even as they're throwing mud at the other person, will probably get positive attention out of that. It's a sorry commentary on the state of affairs, I'll have to admit that. But I do think that the lighter touch that Mike Braun showed in that ad, you know, carrying the cutouts across the street and making the offhand comment to one at the end of the ad, that actually may win him points.
All right. Well, South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg is making the moves you make to gear up for a presidential run, as a national publication touted his potential this week.
Pretty incredible.
Buttigieg has been in the national spotlight for a while now. The Democrat was labeled America's first gay president by the New York Times, and he ran for chair of the Democratic National Committee last year. His political action committee is spending money in key presidential primary states, including Iowa, Michigan, and Arizona. That's as some speculate his chance to advance beyond mayor in Indiana is narrow, a gubernatorial race in 2020 that seems safe for Republicans, and a challenge against incumbent U.S. Senator Todd Young in 2022. Buttigieg himself has ruled out a bid for the U.S. House.
Jennifer Hollowell, we seem to have thrown out a lot of the conventional wisdom or the political norms in the last couple of years here, but is going from mayor to president a little too big a leap?
I think it is. The mayor, though, has proven that he's taking a go-big-or-go-home kind of strategy. But it was too big of a leap when he tried to become the Democrat National Committee chair. And I think that it probably is here too, but I suspect he knows that. I think that he is really interested in raising his profile and something else on the national stage. I don't know that that's president, but it's certainly a way to become more known across the country with Democrats, and that's what he's doing.
Is it simply unrealistic?
Excuse me, we have a reality TV star as president, and you're telling me that a mayor who has demonstrated an ability to take innovative
approaches to small
business...
I'm simply asking the question.
The answer is, of course, he could run for president, and of course he could be elected president. If we can elect Donald Trump, frankly, my pet dog could get elected president, because he's as qualified as Donald Trump is to hold that office. I think Pete's
all depends
doing,
on where he stands on abortion.
Which day? I mean, Donald Trump's changed his position on that like he's changed his position on everything else. So the answer is he represents, Pete Buttigieg represents new blood and a new get-things-done kind of approach to it, not as ideological as a lot of the candidates that have been out there. And I think that's a breath of fresh air. Now, it is a leap to get from where he is to there, and it takes an awful lot of money and an awful lot of support. But he's raising his profile, and there are a lot of opportunities in there. It may be the ultimate prize. It may be something else. But he's certainly not doing himself any harm.
Both of these have alluded to something else. Is that something else? Is this really one of those presidential campaigns that's about running for vice president?
I don't really think so. I'm not sure what the something else may be. But as Gretzky used to say, you miss every shot you don't take. And there may be something else for Pete Buttigieg here, but I think the thing that he brings to the race, or to the notion of the race, at least at this point, is something that Ann touched on, and that is a pretty moderate record and position. And I think Democrats are kind of searching to find a winnable and sellable message. And I think he's got a message that can be picked up. And if he's the vanguard of that, and then it becomes something that the party at large can reflect in large numbers, then I think they're on to something. But as far as personally, why not? Go big, or as Jennifer said, go big or go home.
Indiana is the state of vice presidents, it seems. Is this
a bucket, and that's worth a bucket.
We've had a president, too.
We've had a president, too.
It's worth a bucket of you-know-what, and that was a Hoosier, by the way, who coined that expression,
true.
Which it's not what they say in the textbooks, but I won't say on the show what the bucket was. Sorry, Ann. I'm sensitive to your gentle side. There's an appeal here, because basically if you have the scarlet letter of Washington, if you've been emerging from a traditional proving ground for presidential candidates, maybe not have the luster it used to if, you know, now everybody's running from Washington, not toward it.
Even as they're running,
figuratively, they're still running toward it. But you still, if you want somebody who has executive experience, there's arguably no better place to do that than in a mayoral office. Now, probably in a larger city might give you better chops than a mid-sized community in the northern part of Indiana. But it's it's interesting, and he brings also a knowledge and an appreciation of kind of the pinpoint campaigning that goes with technology in the 21st century, in a manner that maybe some acknowledge is important but haven't yet fully grasped. So this may be the proving ground for whether or not a new type of campaigning and a new type of
candidate identification
tool is effective.
Yeah. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, going from mayor to president realistic for Pete Buttigieg? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, is a special session of the General Assembly necessary this year? 37% say yes, it is. 63% say no. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Congressman and U.S. Senate candidate Luke Messer's wife Jennifer's job with the City of Fishers is back in the spotlight this week as she re-upped her contract.
Attorney Jennifer Messer has a contract with the City of Fishers that pays her $240,000 a year, principally to help its economic development efforts. That deal came under scrutiny last year as her husband Luke launched his U.S. Senate bid. It generated backlash in both directions as some, including Messer herself, leveled sexism accusations against those pushing the story. Messer this week re-upped that contract for another year. Fishers Mayor Scott Fadness argues it's a good deal for the city because Messer charges less than other private attorneys.
John Schwann, is considering the controversy that surrounded this last time, was now a good time to re-up the deal?
Not ideal, probably, but I also don't know. I have not looked at the contract. I don't know if there was an expiration date that required, in terms of technical legal terms, that this be re-upped now. If it were just this were the arbitrary date to do it, maybe why not wait? On the other hand, if there had been some requirement that it be done now, and in fact something was sort of, I don't want to say nefariously, but pushed in an inappropriate manner to the back burner so that it wouldn't surface until after an election,
right. then that looks worse.
Then that becomes an even bigger problem. I think the strategy that's been taken here, which is, hey, you know, she's doing this for 10 years. She was doing it for 3 years before her husband was even elected to Congress.
Yep.
So it's not as if they hired her with the expectation that she could somehow deliver a vote in Congress.
Yeah, this was flared up when it first came out for a little while, and then it simmered down and kind of went away. But this brings it back up. It's just, why the timing?
Well, I'm guessing it's because it was time to re-up the contract. And if you think she's doing a good job, and you've already defended it to begin with, then you just re-up the contract. I mean, politics is such a nasty business anymore. And I'm laughing because I just cannot believe it. Look, it's a legitimate issue if you want to question whether or not there's something going on, but that question's been answered.
Yeah.
And, I guess Mayor Fadness will have to stand on this question in his reelection, and Luke Messer, you know, it may affect his election. But the fact is, she's a qualified attorney. She's had this job for some time. The story came, it went, and they're renewing the contract. The timing is inconvenient, but I'm guessing the reason they're doing it is because of an expiration date. It's just crazy.
Yeah. The question has been asked and answered, and it was in the rearview mirror. If it is just a timing issue, which it probably is, But it does bring it back to the forefront at least a little bit. Does Luke Messer have to worry at all about how this will play in the minds of voters as they go to the polls?
There's no question in my mind that Rukita will use it. There's no question in my
mind.
Already
has.
Well, he'll use it again.
Yeah.
And he'll talk about the arrogance of renewing it in the middle of the campaign. You know, so the timing is, unfortunate doesn't begin to describe the timing on this. But, you know, I'm sympathetic. I mean, he's going to need a visible means of support once he loses. So I understand why they want to do it.
This is unfortunate timing for Luke Messer. Will it be an issue when people go to the polls?
I don't think so. And I mean, there's nothing new to this story. As you said, I mean, she's in legal work for the city of Fishers for 10 years. She has a specialized scope of work, economic development deals, and the city of Fishers has had record job growth over the past several years. She's played a critical role in that. And, you know, she is charging a lower rate than what comparable attorneys are charging. And the timing, I think, is because there was a whole package of other legal services contracts that happened, and they were all around the same time. And so it was a much bigger thing than that, but of course the media only focuses on one contract, not the others that may be more different.
I don't think anybody else is married to Luke Messer, though.
That
would be quite a story.
Let's start that.
The Trump administration this week announced plans to add a question about citizenship to the upcoming 2020 census.
The Trump administration argues asking about a person's citizenship on the census form will help provide the most complete and accurate data possible. The White House also claims, falsely, that the citizenship question has been on every census for decades until 2010. Several states are suing to stop the question from appearing on the form. They worry it will depress response rates and lead to an inaccurate population count in places with higher illegal immigrant populations. Congressman Luke Messer and Todd Rokita applauded the Trump administration's move.
John Ketzenberger, should the government ask this question?
Well, you know, you can have a pretty good debate about it. We're not going to have a debate. We're going to have accusations back and forth. The thing is, it hasn't been asked. The idea is to find out, according to the law that originally set the census in place, is to find out how many people are living here. And there are a lot of people who are living here in a lot of different arrangements, and some of them are illegal, and the law says you should count them. The other thing is that kind of a question would have a chilling effect. And given the history of what's gone on in voter ID and some other questions and issues, I think that that's the intent of a question like this, rather than to find out legitimately whether you are a citizen or not. So I think that if that's behind it, and I suspect that's what it is, then it shouldn't be asked.
He talked about, you know, it's not about a debate, it's about the accusations now, and politics is perception. Is this a hard one if you're on the other side of this, if you're saying it shouldn't be asked? Is this a hard one to fight against? We're just asking a question.
Not necessarily. I'm not an expert on demography or in the counting of individuals, but I know people who are experts have said, and by this I mean the last six heads of the U.S. Census Bureau, people appointed and working with parties, you know, both parties, who all came together and signed a letter basically saying, this is wrong. We haven't done this since the 1950s. Yes, on the there's an interim survey that looks at a much smaller sample and looks at other sorts of issues that asks citizenship questions, but not certainly despite what the White House press secretary said. It was not just removed. So as a practical matter, there are other tools that the federal government has that would deliver the same information. So all of that together, and you don't even have to speculate about the motivation here. If you look at the Deputy Attorney General within the Justice Department, who this is his baby, his whole raison d'etre for the past 20 years has been serving as an architect of all of the voter, you might say, suppression measures, voter ID measures that have been put forth in any number of states across the country. So I don't think there's much need to speculate about what's at work here.
You add this issue to the pile of things that will get talked about in debates across the country and political races across the country. Is this a good one to be added to that pile on both sides? Is this a debate that's going to serve either side particularly well?
Well, I mean, I certainly don't see any problem with debating it for anyone who wants to. I think Hoosiers would probably be surprised to realize or think about the fact that it's not a question. And if we're talking about how we're drawing voting districts and things like that, perhaps it matters whether they are people who are legally allowed to vote. And, you know, Luke Messer announced that he's filing legislation that would tie federal grant funding to legal residents so that we aren't just sending dollars to communities and rewarding them based on numbers of illegal immigrants or residents in those communities. So, I mean, I think it is appropriate to know the facts here and then figure out and debate what you do with those facts after.
Rokita and Messer, as I mentioned, supported the move. I doubt they had to think very hard about it, right. In terms
it's
of supporting
to,
it.
It's designed to punish Democratic urban cities. That's what it's designed to do. And it is designed for voter suppression, and it's guaranteed to get answers that aren't correct because people are not as dumb as apparently Donald Trump thinks they are. So it is a useless exercise. It's a lot like the voter ID. It is a problem or is a solution in search of a problem. We haven't asked this question for 70 years for a reason, okay? And now they want to throw that out despite bipartisan census operatives saying it's a bad idea.
But it's the same thing with voter ID then. When you say to an average person, you should have to prove who you are when you vote,
yeah, sure.
You should have to, what's right. wrong with asking the question?
Because the problem with it isn't easy for some people to prove who they are, okay? They can have expired driver's license. They may not drive. They may not have the ability to go to the BMV to get. Perfect example was a woman in my husband's district, 90 years old and bedridden, okay? Well, her license is expired, okay? They'll send a voter registration person out to register her, not to register her, to vote her, but they can't do it because she doesn't have a valid ID. And guess what? BMV will not go out there and give it to her. So there are examples like that. Are they huge percentages? No. But we've seen elections decided by a handful of votes. And what the voter ID and what the census information is designed to do is to punish people. It isn't designed to get at information. It's designed to make certain Republicans stay on top.
That's ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous.
The voter ID issue went to the Supreme Court, and Democrats couldn't produce a single person who was not allowed to vote. If you are legal to vote, there is no issue of suppression.
Right.
But Republicans, nor could they produce a single person or many who were among the 3 million who fraudulently voted.
Proven.
I mean, I think they're
it's
both.
All
they're
right.
Moving on. There's a Senate GOP primary fight playing out in Indiana's 6th congressional district Republican primary.
Senate candidate Luke Messer, the 6th district incumbent, has been appearing recently with 6th district candidate Greg Pence. Greg is a Columbus businessman and Vice President Mike Pence's older brother. An outside political group with ties to Mike Pence has run ads backing Messer in the Senate race. Senate candidate Mike Braun has appeared with Jonathan Lamb, a Yorktown businessman who's facing Pence in the 6th district primary.
And Delaney, I'll start with this. Is this more a case on the Luke Messer side of Messer helping Pence, or is this Pence helping Messer?
I think it's trying to wrap himself in the Pence shield here, and it shows a degree of desperation that he'd do this. I mean, politics 101 is you run your own race. You stay out of any other, particularly primary races, when you're seeking the nomination. The fact that he's in this and jumped in with both feet, and that Braun jumped in with both feet, it seems to me shows that they're second and third, and I'm not sure what the order is in that primary.
Why get involved if you're Luke Messer or if you're Jonathan or if you're Mike Braun? Why get involved in a congressional? I know it's Luke Messer's district, but why get involved in the primary?
On the Messer side, this is really simple. Luke Messer and Greg Pence have been very good friends for a long time. Greg Pence was the co-chair, finance chair of Luke Messer's campaign before he decided to run for Congress, and so of course. He would want to support him, and Greg Pence believes, as he has since the beginning, that Luke Messer is the best candidate to win the U.S. Senate race in November. And Luke supports Greg, so they're campaigning together in the district. I mean, the thing that is really a mystery and a head-scratcher is why Mike Braun would campaign with Pence's opponent, who has been very outspoken against the Trump-Pence agenda and the Pence family, Pence brothers. So,
if they're not,
that's why Braun did this.
If they're not necessarily lighting the bridge on fire, have they both struck a match where if you run into the situation where the guy you're not supporting ends up winning the primary, are you in a little bit of trouble there?
I'm going to go full circle here, the notion of conventional wisdom. Yes, that would have been a problem, and that's why you didn't see many people, deciding whom to back until after the primary. I mean, that was sort of traditional. Now, though, because of this seemingly new era where we see candidates, every Republican candidate, as far as I know, not just these three, but across the country, trying to hook themselves to the Trump-Pence wagon, I suppose it makes sense because of the relationship, long-standing relationship
except
that Jennifer
those
described.
Except 40 congressmen who are not running again.
All right, well, that's that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.